This is a poem by Rosemary Wotolla Tromer. It's called "For This I Walk Outside." Not to escape the world, but to be more wholly in it. Sharp cold stings my cheeks, not like a slap, but like a thrilling burn of whiskey as it blazes down the throat, the kind of wild aliveness that brooks no choice but to wake up to life, to champion it, to know life as the most wondrous thing, even as they steep in the ugliness we humans commit. This is what life asks of us. I walk outside to be more wholly here. Hear the way the Steller's jay is here. Even on the coldest day, it's every fluffing, every peck, every head bob, every flight is in service to life. It's never confused about its purpose. I want to be in service. Outside, everything is teacher, the cold, the snow, the bird, the day, this fallible, fabulous human race, this improbable, beautiful planet in space. To serve life, I must inhabit it wholly and be inhabited by it too. As if all could end tonight, as if it all goes on forever. So, hello, Sangha. Maybe you can just start by asking how many people in the sit or right now are still feeling reverberations from the election this week? Feeling some effect, reverberations from that? Yes. So the theme that we're exploring for the month, as most people probably know, is equanimity. And this comes at the end of many of the lists, the Buddhist lists, including the paramis, which we've been diving into all year. And I'll describe it a little bit in a minute, but I was asked to write an article for the Seattle Insight newsletter this month. And I was asked to write an article before the election. And so writing it before, but knowing it was going to come out after, I gave a lot of thought to what is helpful, what would be helpful no matter what. And I think this is a good question. It's an interesting question. What is helpful no matter what? And I think sometimes our concepts about Dharma practice are kind of too small. So our practice, at least as I experience it and understand it, can't be reduced to one particular technique, or an acronym, or a three-step strategy, or an emotion management system, right? A coping skill, although there is coping, it does help with coping. But what is large enough? Yeah. So in my teacher training a number of years ago, we learned a little bit of the history of the word mindfulness. Not the Dhamma history, but we were told that Jon Kabat-Zinn, who came up with this wonderful system, this wonderful application of mindfulness called mindfulness-based stress reduction, for people who were experiencing chronic pain and chronic illness in hospitals who couldn't find any relief. And anyway, he was on retreat, long retreat, at the center in Barrie, Massachusetts, the Insight Meditation Society. He was on long retreat and had this question, what is one word that I can come up with that can translate or can hold all of the Dharma? What could it be? And mindfulness was the word that is meant to carry the whole of the Dharma. And sometimes that's possible, but sometimes mindfulness can be a doorway into the whole of the Dharma, but sometimes it gets burdened and bloated and can't quite handle it all. Yeah. So I think the paramis as a list, and many of the lists, they're not meant to be just one thing, just one quality, but they're meant to point to our resources or capacities of a deep, multifaceted, multi-layered mind. And so different qualities and capacities might be helpful at different times. But hopefully we find, especially in times when our ground might be shifting and changing, hopefully we find that there is a doorway into something deeper that can not just hold us, comfort us, soothe us, but can also take the disruption of the present moment as a teacher, as something that can further us, strengthen us. So as the poem speaks to that I read at the beginning, one of my refuges this week and often is to be outside. And so I live fortunate enough to be near a beach. And so often I go walking on the beach and I am just aware of my footsteps, the sound of the rocks. I'm aware of what I'm seeing and hearing, just aware as best I'm able. And as I was walking, staying very alert to the present moment, one gateway to equanimity, a common gateway that is very accessible, is to invite ourselves fully into the present moment's experience, just as it is. In its directness and its fullness. This even could be called mindfulness practice, right? And we can just let that inform and deepen within us. But anyway, I'm walking, I'm feeling the support of the simplicity of that, I'm tuning into that. And as often happens on this walk, I see people in my neighborhood. And how many people have found pets a kind of refuge this week? Anybody? Pets? My dog has no concept. But the whole family was looking at the dog, being like, it has no concept. He has no concept of elections, of anything that's happening. Anyway, that's a digression. But so walking on the beach, and I have a neighbor who is a geologist, and he's just full of so much wonder and openness, no matter what the conditions are. And so as I'm walking on the beach, using the rocks for refuge, using sound for refuge, using just the openness of the natural surroundings as refuge, he's collecting these huge rocks and stacking them on the logs for everyone who wants to see, to look at, everyone who was walking by to look at, stacking them. And he's kind of waiting for any invitation to explain what they are and where they've come from, right? Like just like the way scientists often do with that sense of wonder. And so whereas I've come with a particular agenda, I'm here to get calm, right? I'm here to not be around people. I am here to get calm, using the beach for my own purposes. And this often happens with him. This didn't just happen today. He really wants to show me these rocks and where they came from. They came from the Strait of Juan de Fuca. They were forged in this massive glacier. They belong to this age. And there's this sense of wonder. And he, in a way, is doing his practice. Yeah, he's doing his practice. Openness of mind, curiosity, wonder, connecting with nature inside or outside as nature. And I get a little vicarious hit of delight just from his delight and his openness. But it also is a way, it's a reminder that the present moment is, we can bring all of our awareness and our presence into this moment's experience. And what arises in this present moment also has a history. It has a tide, a wave, a stream of conditioning that's brought it to the present moment. Right? So we can appreciate that history. We don't have to dismiss that history. This kind of a doorway into equanimity for me is the present moment as itself. But it's also this hinge point in which we receive the impressions of the past. Yeah. All of the conditions that have been converging and affecting how we are now. And also this portal into how things unfold or affect the future moment. So the present moment is extremely helpful as an anchor, as a place to gather attention and energy, to receive the impressions from the past as they come forward. But it is also a place, it is the only place in which real change happens, right here in the present moment, this hinge point between past and future. So equanimity is translated many ways, all of these qualities, but what I'd really like to inspired a bit by practicing with Anna Brown Griswold this weekend, Insight Dialogue Practice. She was also reflecting on equanimity. And so helpful in just the reminder that all of these qualities, all of these words that we talk about are qualities that we can feel and experience. So this doesn't sound condescending because I love books. I am a reader. I am a lover of books and language, but this is not a book group. This is how do we actually experience these things? And can we spend some of our time here together actually getting a taste, getting a felt taste for these qualities? So that's what I'd like to do tonight. With great respect again for the week that we've had, but also with the recognition that we can use these conditions that we're in. This is the place where we actually have the space, the motivation or intentionality, and the support to affect how the ripples and reverberations continue into the future. This is the place. This is it. So the definitions for equanimity, so upekkha in Pali, refers to our capacity for balance in the mind, for a sense of steadiness and sturdiness and poise, like the description of poise, because it's alert. It's not rigid and fixed. It's not a stance. It's poised. It also points to an unshakable sense of freedom. And that, I think, is a freedom not just for ourselves and our own well-being, but I think that freedom is also the freedom to act, the freedom to contribute, the freedom to be creative, the freedom to not just be locked into reactivity and compulsivity. So equanimity, the biggest misunderstanding of equanimity, and I'm sure Tim mentioned this last week for those who were here, we can't overemphasize it, is that it is not, the biggest misunderstanding is that it is passive, that it is a kind of stoicism or aloofness or remove. That it is preferring our own peace at the expense of kind of getting messy, getting involved, feeling disrupted. Those of us who come to this practice, I count myself firmly in this category, may have a deep longing for peace. Yes? Do you feel this? Anybody? A deep longing for peace. This is good. This is good. And during COVID, my husband and son set up a zip line in they created a treehouse out of the laurels in our backyard and set up a zip line. And I often think of this because there is a strong tendency in this practice when we hold out a quality like peace and feel that longing for peace to kind of want to zip line over any territory that could be threatening, destabilizing, disorienting, and what could be more natural. If there were a zip line, I would take it. I would be the first one on it. But I know from practice that it does not work that way. Right? It does not work that way. The peace that the practice points to includes all of the parami. It's vast and deep and multifaceted. It includes all of our resources, all of our capacities, but also it brings us right through all of our greed, all of our hatred, all of our delusion, ours and everyone else's. So the peace that the practice points to is an unshakable peace that's unshakable in every condition, no matter what conditions we find ourselves in. Right? So it doesn't demand or command that things be a certain way around us, and it doesn't command or demand that we become a certain way inside us either. Right? So it's the mind or the heart of equanimity is in touch. So this is the metta quality, in that it stays connected, it stays receptive, but through deepening, through wisdom, through growing our capacity, we are able to learn more about a peace that is unshakable in the very midst of it. And in that is the freedom to act. So again, I want to be aware of talking too much about it, and sort of give ourselves a chance to really experience it a bit more directly. So what I'd like us to talk about first, or explore together first, is two particular aspects of practice that we may have been aware of this week. Right. So this is what were your sources of refuge this week? Where did you go to feel a sense of safety and support? And we'll just spend a little bit of time speaking about those. It's helpful to just recognize what we do. And again, this doesn't need to be particularly grand. Just where did you go to feel a sense of safety and support, and perhaps something wider to keep your mind afloat or stable? And then the second question is, how did you feel disrupted this week? How have you felt disrupted this week? And so equanimity is able to hold both of those at the same time. Right? So I come back to this many times, but Zenju Erthlin Manuel, wonderful writer, activist, practitioner, deep practitioner, teacher, says, we are to be undone. This is life. There is no getting around it. We unravel over and over again. We unravel over and over again. Life gets disrupted. We're thrown off. We face the unimaginable. It's sobering. It's sobering. Ending up in a place we never thought we'd be. In that strange place, we are quietly undone. We're not who we thought we were. Yeah. So we could talk about this individually, this feeling of unraveling or being undone. We can also imagine it collectively, ending up in a place perhaps we never thought we'd be, in a strange place. And so what I'd like to do for the next little bit is just in practice, in conversation with another person, with awareness. So keeping some awareness in your body, in the present moment's experience here now. Reflect on your places of refuge, security, support, and some ways where you might be feeling the sense of being disrupted or being undone. So awareness can know both of those, can hold both of those. Okay, so if you're willing, I'd like to do groups of two or three. So I would encourage two if you're able. Sometimes it needs to be three, but let's do two or three. And when you meet, introduce yourself. Decide who's going to speak first so each person has a chance to speak and listen. And then pause. Just pause. Allow yourself to pause. Connect to your body, your breathing, your refuge, and just speak clearly, honestly, simply as you're able without a particular pressure to get it right, to have it fully formed. Be kind of surprised at what you are offering. You don't have to have it prepared or perfect by any means, but it's a way, these conversations can also be a way of meditating together in the present moment. Yeah. You don't have to know what you're going to say. Okay. And as you're listening, just for a few moments, just listen, just receive what the other person is saying. Yeah, just hear them, lend them your mindful presence for some time before going back and forth. So give some time to separating speaker and listener. And then, this is also a present moment awareness practice. So spend some time in the individual roles, and then you can go back and forth. Okay, is that clear enough? All right, so let's do, about 12 minutes, okay? So it's 8:20 now, so maybe those in the breakout rooms, come back, I'll ring the bell around 8:30, 8:31, we'll be back together at about 8:32, okay? So those in the room can find someone near you, introduce yourselves, and decide, speaker and listener, and pause. I would just invite a pause. Likely feeling the effects of the speaking, listening. And wondering, what was it? So, question specifically, what was it like to speak to both? Hopefully you had a chance. Hopefully that was long enough to speak to both. But what was it like to speak to both or listen to both? The refuge and the disruption. Did you notice? Yeah, please. Can you wait for it quick? Thank you.
Talking about the disruption took up more time and space.
Okay. Took up more time and space, the disruption. Yeah. Yeah. One here and then Lauren online. Thanks, Adam.
I think just that The refuge and the disruption were sometimes the same thing in a different context. So for me, I'm working on projects that involve woodworking and things like that. And you have to do a lot of calculations. And when I'm there and I'm kind of like have my hands on it and I'm doing the physical activities, then that provides a sense of like I can just feel everything. I have the world around. I have a good sense of order at that point. I feel very present. But when I'm going to dinner and I'm talking to my family and I'm thinking about all of this again and it's still there, then it can kind of be the other end of that, and it can be the disruption at that point.
Yeah. Okay, so online, Lauren, and then Dorothy and Carla. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. I was going to say a similar thing, that it seemed like they were one, they were very connected, and that it was right to do both, because that's what's up. It's both. For example, I really am noticing ill will, and I have a great desire not to have ill will. And I've noticed that I try to shelter myself from situations which will incite ill will. And I feel apprehensive about exploring it, because it feels so, I would say my aspiration is so much that I will go beyond ill will and I'll find something stronger than that. And at the same time, I feel really vulnerable and like I'm not handling it too well. And there are many moments that it just comes up. And I find myself very different people's reactions. Some of them I judge a lot, you know, like, oh, that's a good reaction. That's not a good reaction. So that's a really disruptive. Mm-hmm. But the refuge has been being able to have so many experiences with the Sangha, and it's a deep, deep refuge. And meditation and reading, and you know, that's just been a great source, starting from the sit that was offered the night of the election was very powerful.
Thank you, Lauren. Dorothy.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to say that my experience was one of just recognition and gratitude, you know, for the awareness that we're all experiencing, you know, these feelings, these, you know, and I'm calling it grief just because we move through stages of, you know, bargaining and denial and acceptance and, you know, and I'm not at acceptance, but I'm, you know, and I think that's the disruption, is that I'm experiencing this journey and and we're finding different ways of refuge, but I think it's all about finding your ground, you know, and in my case, it's been somewhat literally, right? Like putting my feet on the ground and, you know, experiencing my garden or cooking. And my dialogue partner is finding the same through sort of reading history, you know, and finding the perspective, like just a much larger ground, you know, to settle themselves in. And so I just have so much gratitude for this experience of everybody together tonight, sort of expressing these same things, you know, and finding different routes, you know, to refuge. Through, I guess, the Sangha. Yeah.
Thank you, Dorothy. Yeah, Carla.
Yeah, also feeling really grateful just for us to be able to talk about, you know, both the disruption and the refuge. And I was reflecting, is my internet kind of breaking up?
I couldn't hear you at first, but I can now, I think.
In the group, I was reflecting on my experience this whole week has been that balance of the disruption and refuge, because I attended several of the Sims sits around the election, and then Wednesday night I have an in-person sangha here in Tacoma. And that night I experienced the sangha as an incredible refuge, and our conversation was very focused on refraining from ill will, on understanding that all people's beliefs and actions are results of their circumstances and conditions throughout their lifetime. And I walked out of there feeling, you know, so grateful that there are people with such strong values who are just doing their best to not participate in this cycle of fear and hatred. But then the next day, I still felt very unbalanced, and I realized that we had, I think, inadvertently done a little bit of a spiritual bypass, because it was the day after the election and we hadn't really allowed ourselves to just have difficult emotions that day. And I realized that the next day I kind of had to say to myself, it's okay to be fearful. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be upset, because, you know, what's at stake ultimately is real harm to real people. And that can't be just brushed away. So I needed to say it's okay to have difficult emotions. But then when I let myself feel those, it was almost like once that had moved through me, the refuge, the tools that I had received in Sangha of that intention to refrain from ill will was there waiting for me. It was just, it needed to be the appropriate time. But once I had allowed myself to have the more negative emotions, I didn't sort of go down that slippery slope too far. I didn't go all the way into hatred, because I'd already been given this reminder of you can aspire to understanding and refraining from ill will.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I imagine many people can relate to some of those waves and fluctuations that you mentioned. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Carla. Yeah, there's no, as I was saying, there's no zip line. So we have to be really careful what we do with the ideal of peace. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be the space that allows the whole range. And then it also is a wisdom quality. So then it can actually discern, allowing the whole range of responses, reactions, movements, arisings in the present moment. After that, we can discern what's helpful, what's useful, what's needed, but not before, not like from a safe perch. Right. Nina, hello. Nina, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you, Carrie. I too went through circles and still going through circles of emotion, first shock. But there's a lot of fear for me and for my family, and trying to not project into the future is challenging right now. You know, what do we do? What's going to happen? Where do we go? And what's going to happen to my grandchildren, my great grandsons. And so I, as I said, I went from shock to fear and also, you know, doubt. But really, I'm here. This is the first time I've come to a Monday Sangha. Mm-hmm. And I've been coming to Sims for many, many, many years with some pause in between, still doing my work. But it's the Sangha, and this evening is really being able to speak what's on my mind is a balm for me. And I'm so grateful for the Sangha. So I have to say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina. Yeah, being able to speak the truth, even though it's uncomfortable, even though our experience might be uncomfortable or one of fear, to be able to speak it can be a deep form of acknowledgement and allowing, but also we can feel maybe a greater sense of refuge when we feel as though it's more shared.
Yes, it's made me feel that this is my community.
Yeah. Well, I certainly appreciate your depth of practice and your activism over these years. So I bow to that. Thank you. So I know I too have been meeting in Sangha almost every day since the election, in various forms, sometimes teaching, sometimes participating. And it always feels like not quite enough, not quite enough. So I want to just say a couple more things in terms of equanimity, just reminders about equanimity, and then we'll close. But equanimity opens, grows when we're in touch, I think, both with our very human need for stability and safety and the reality of change, both of those. So equanimity is really the ability to hold called the worldly winds or the swings of worldly experience. So it said that everything is always fluctuating between pain and pleasure, between loss and gain, between praise, being praised for what we do, being acknowledged, and blame, and between fame and disrespect. So this is a really helpful reflection on equanimity, is to notice how those winds are blowing, where we experience experiencing things in terms of that. It's not so neat. I used to talk about it like a pendulum, but it's not so neat. It's not just swinging back and forth. But the very human response to want to arrest it at one side or the other. Right? So to want to... I don't know why I'm getting all these kid images of playing tonight, but swinging back and forth on a rope swing and like wanting to just keep it on one side. Just the pleasure side or just the praise side. But the nature of that wind is that it's always in motion. And so equanimity is not some static point in the middle where that doesn't move. It's getting off the ride entirely, right? It's not a forced stasis where we're not affected in either direction. It's allowing the whole thing to swing and move and change, but not having our well-being, our sense of self, our sense of okayness dependent on where that is swinging. Yeah. So that is a way of being in alignment with change, to remember that nature of those worldly winds, or sometimes they're called the vicissitudes, always fluctuating, always turning into something else. The writer F. Scott Fitzgerald said, one sign of wisdom, equanimity is a wisdom quality, one sign of wisdom is to be able to hold two seemingly contradictory things in mind at the same time and still retain an ability to function. Right? So we can think about this as the worldly winds. We can think about this as holding two different views. We can think about it as the ability really to hold the opposites between hope and fear, between wanting and not wanting, but still maintaining a sense of direction. So this is the important part too, especially with equanimity, is that we don't forget our sense of direction or what we're committed to. So the wisdom that grows through equanimity is the wisdom that is really able to discern what we're responsible for and what we're not. What we're responsible for and what we're not. And when we become clearer about that, when we can become clearer about that, again, not through ziplining, but by through learning in the mess and the muck and the mistakes and the rope swing from being on that ride, when we're clear, what am I responsible for and what am I not? I am responsible for meeting the conditions as they arise in this present moment, as best I'm able. I am responsible for the way my mind, I'm responsible for responding to those conditions as best I'm able, and choosing where my actions arise from, right? So what we set in motion into the future. So the place that we act from. This, as we've talked about in many different ways, when we talked about non-harming, when we talked about kindness, when we talked about patience, when we remember our resources, know what's helpful to keep in mind when. Yeah, this becomes the basis for what we act, for how we act, for what we set going into the future. So this is the place in which change can happen. So holding the opposites and still remembering our direction. So there's a lot more to say about this always, but this is what we can have influence over. This is what we can have influence over. Yeah. We can remember our resources. We can know the way that our mind is receiving experience and responding to experience. And we can choose what we set in motion by how we act and respond. So Joanna Macy, the wonderful activist and practitioner of many, many years. She's one of our precious elders. She says, you can take refuge in your actions. Taking refuge in your actions. So I know that maybe you've noticed too, in response to this week, there's been a lot of beauty and inspiration and solidarity coming forward. And so along with all of it, there is that too. And Rebecca Solnit, I'll just end with a short quote from her. Just parts of a quote from her. She wrote a wonderful book called Hope in the Dark. And as crises continue to happen, she keeps updating it. I think she first wrote it when the millennium happened, like when the year 2000 happened. And she keeps writing extra. It keeps being relevant with every crisis, every new war, everything. But anyway, it's a wonderful perspective on not giving in to either naive hope or fear, right? But this, anyway, very helpful. And so there's a lot coming around from her this week as well. But I can hear just a convergence of equanimity, kindness, and resolve. Yeah, which are the three last paramis, and so powerful. You are not giving up, and neither am I. The fact that we cannot save everything does not mean we cannot save anything. And everything we can save is worth saving. You may need to grieve or scream or take time off, but you have a role no matter what. And right now, good friends and good principles, values are worth gathering in. Remember what you love. Remember what you love. Remember what loves you. Remember that even in the tide of hate, what love is. The pain you feel is because of what you love. You can be heartbroken or furious or both at once. You can scream in your car or on a cliff. You can also get up tomorrow and water the flower pots and call someone who's upset and check your equipment for going onward. A lot of us are going to come under direct attack, and a lot of us are going to resist by building solidarity and sanctuary. Gather up your resources, the metaphysical ones that are heart and soul and care, as well as the practical ones. There is no alternative to persevering, and that does not require you to feel good. There is no alternative to persevering, and that does not require you to feel good. You can keep walking, whether it's sunny or raining. Take care of yourself and remember that taking care of something else is an important part of taking care of yourself, because you are interwoven with the 10 trillion things in this single garment of destiny that has been stained and torn but is still being woven and mended and washed. So may each of us remember our sources of refuge and sanctuary. May each of us remember our capacity that we have a role to play. And may each of us remember our loves and what we are deeply committed to. And may we be an act from peace. Thank you, Sangha. Appreciate you all very much, very much these days. So it's 9. I hope those in the room will just be willing to just say hello to one another on your way out. And I really hope that you find Seattle Insight in all of its forms and offerings a refuge for you during this time. I really do. I know that's our intention. So if you're moved to support us here and our continued programming, always deeply appreciate that. So I think everyone knows how they can do that. So may go well.